The Ninth Circuit Court is a joke. They and the Washington State Attorney General and the Honolulu Attorney General, who tried to block President Trump's attempts at national security, look like fools today. And the Ninth Circuit Court gets overturned about 80% of the time. The Supreme Court today allowed Trump and his administration to follow through on temporarily stopping refugees from six Muslim-dominated Middle East countries. It was always about national security, not about Islam. There's one thing that we in America seem to do better than anybody else on the planet. We corner the offended market. And it's not even close. Liberal Americans love to get offended more than they love themselves. It's turned into a job for some liberals, and the ones who do it professionally are millionaires, people like Al Sharpton. Liberals get offended faster and more efficiently than anybody else. And it's not just their speed that separates them from the rest. It's their endurance. You see, every week there are dozens of new national outrages and boycott campaigns and social media crusades to raise awareness about something deemed offensive or to get somebody fired for saying something that they found offensive or to teach people that some previously non-offensive thing has now become offensive. Liberals can juggle six or seven outrages all at once and then drop them and pick up new ones in the blink of an eye. Liberals conjure up more fabricated outrages in 1 month than past civilizations could have mustered in 1,000 years. It's always something. Liberals have located the fountain of eternal indignation, and they drink by the gallon. It's no wonder, then, that this is the climate that gives rise to the concept called microaggressions. For anyone who's not familiar, a microaggression is something that college students learn about because science and history are too boring. According to Wikipedia, it's a theory that describes social exchanges in which a member of a dominant culture or gender says or does something that belittles or alienates a member of a marginalized group. Wait a minute, you might think. Isn't that just a regular aggression? Well, we need a new word, because the old words describing that are objectively and explicitly offensive. Microaggressions, on the other hand, are things that are offensive only because some member of an approved victim group declared it to be so. A microaggression, in other words, is what happens when someone says something inoffensive, but the listener chooses to be offended by it anyway. In the bizarro world of contemporary progressivism, only the offended person can tell you how you really feel, what you really meant, even if it's untrue. Now, looking at BuzzFeed, we find a bunch of fashionably somber 20-somethings describing the times when someone microaggressively forgot their last name, or complimented their hair, or asked where they were from. How is it that we have become a nation populated by wimps and crybabies? Liberal politicians spend their time being offended by things that don't really matter instead of solving real issues like the economy, jobs, or threats to national security. The world of political correctness that started under the first Bush administration and was placed on steroids by the Clintons has become so out of control that harmless and previously inoffensive terms now offend somebody. We have become so pansified that people can no longer express themselves. If you want to be offended, fine by me. If you cannot laugh at yourself and the world, you have deeper issues than somebody calling you a name. Years ago, Americans were upset with the remarks made by a Japanese politician who stated the view that America is plagued by crime, poverty, and drugs. Its families are disintegrating, and its children are becoming illiterate. It is a power-hungry country that can destroy Iraq, but is incapable of balancing its own budget. Its industries are non-competitive, and the executives a bunch of crybabies. Now, that was said in 1991, but it's even more true today. Every bad decision Americans make is somebody else's fault. If the Japanese thought that Americans were crybabies way back then, what do we look like today? Countless people are offended by Christian symbols and holidays and freely vocalize their distaste. But they refuse to speak the truth about militant Islam, as if we might offend the people who hate us. We have gone to the verge of crazy by allowing people who are in this country illegally to be offended that people refer to them as illegal aliens. Because that term has negative connotations, they say. But doing something illegal should have negative connotations. Among the most offended today are atheists. They claim there is no God, and they are anti-religion. But they persist in their quest to force their non-beliefs on those who do believe. Now they're crying to have atheist chaplains in the military and atheist meeting areas. With all of the crying, it's no surprise that people like Colonel Alan West and Dr. Ben Carson are so refreshing. They are both straight shooters, truth tellers, and they don't feel the need to apologize for it. As Dr. Carson said, political correctness is dangerous because one of our founding principles was freedom of thought and freedom of expression. Political correctness muffles people. It puts a muzzle on them, and at the same time keeps people from discussing important issues while the fabric of this society is changing. Now, I've made no secret of the fact that I have little respect for career Democrats in Washington, but I have to admit that Republicans aren't much better in that they have a majority vote but do little with it. Where is the investigation of Hillary Clinton and Loretta Lynch? Oops, we just got the investigation of Loretta Lynch started. Republicans could have launched those investigations but failed to do so. Although in the minority, Democrats have been allowed to dominate the national debate with false claims about Trump and Russia, and the Republicans let them get away with it. Truth be known, there are some Republicans who do not want the swamp drained. It's been their home for decades. They have the lobbyists in their pocket. They're fat, rich, and happy, and the last thing they want is for Trump to drain their cesspool. The average, ordinary American thought that when Trump spoke of draining the swamp, he meant flushing out Democrats. But it's not just Democrats who need to be flushed out. It's those Republicans in name only, the rhinos, who do as much to undermine the troop presidency as Pelosi, Schumer, and the desperate Democrats do. Until Trump calls out those rhinos, the Democrats will be able to block the agenda that the American people elected Trump to carry through. A case in point, this absolutely bogus fake news about Russia trying to influence our election. They've been doing that for decades, and only a fool would disagree that they were active in the election. But how many times do the officials have to testify that Russia did not alter the election before this nonsense stops? Think about this. The Russian interference in the 2016 election was going on under Obama, before Donald Trump was elected. The administration knew that. The fake news media knew that. Hillary Clinton knew that. But what did they do about it? Nothing. They were so sure that Clinton would win that they had no need to make a big deal about Russia. It was only when Clinton lost that they looked for an excuse and came up with a big deal about Russia. It does seem that the Democratic Party may be finally realizing that their obstructionism is backfiring on them. The American people want progress, not to keep looking back on the Russian activity that's gone on for more than several decades. We need jobs, improved infrastructure, sealed borders, increased security on illegal immigration, and a host of other ills that are confronting the country. President Trump said something last Wednesday in a speech to a packed arena in Iowa that should have been said 8 years ago. He is proposing that immigrants to America be allowed only in if they show they can take care of themselves and not ask for welfare for at least 5 years. That's common sense, folks. We cannot keep paying people to come here legally or illegally. Try moving to Mexico, and you'll find that you cannot stay there unless you're financially able to take care of yourself, not just for 5 years, but forever. No other country pays people to move in, only the loco Americans. Write or call your congressperson and tell them to help the president get that common sense measure passed and to do it quickly. Rest assured, the career Democrats in Washington will demagogue this plan to death. They savor the votes from legals and illegals pouring across our border. They are buying votes with the taxpayers' dollars. Look at your next paycheck and note the tax deductions, and then ask yourself why legal immigrants should be getting part of the money you worked hard to earn. I'm going to give you some stunning information about welfare fraud and abuse today, but first, it happened again last week when Karen Handel, a Republican, beat Jay Ossoff, a Democrat, for Georgia's 6th District runoff special election. It was a strange election in that Democrats put all they had behind a candidate with little or no experience, a man who did not even live in the district and could not even vote for himself. The fake news media was behind the Democrat, and CNN was predicting a win for him. But after the election, CNN reported that the Republicans' win was expected. Which lie are we to believe? The Democratic Party went all out to get a symbolic win. Ossoff's campaign is said to have raised and spent some $40 million. And the money did not come from Georgia. The greatest part of that money came from California, with San Francisco and Los Angeles elites trying to buy an election in Georgia. Hollyweird celebrities donated big to send a message to President Trump, but the message turned out to be a boomerang. Every single midterm special election has been won by Republicans, despite the enormous sums of money being poured into Democratic candidates by liberal out-of-state sources. How long will it take the Democratic Party to understand that their far-left policies have been rejected by American patriots? How long does one throw good money after bad? When will they realize that winning an election begins with having a candidate that can be elected? John Ossoff was a joke, and Georgia voters laughed their ass off at the polls. In the presidential election, the Democrats followed the same old dead-end trail by announcing a candidate, Hillary Clinton, that is about as appealing as a two-day-old roadkill. Meanwhile, Democrats in Congress have begun to slow-walk legislation, which means they'll use every stalling tack in their bag of obstructionist tricks to slow down or stop President Trump's agenda. All of the problems that confront us, and they are many, and they are dangerous, are ignored by Democrats in their hate for the Trump agenda. Now, why is it in your best interest, Republican or Democrat, for the president's attention to be diverted from these main issues by the Democrats and the fake news media floating lie after lie and calling it news? For months now, Democrats have demanded investigations about any collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. They have no proof whatsoever for those demands, but it fits their obstructionism goals to keep the American people's attention diverted from the real issues. We have several investigations going on at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. In the end, I predict that no evidence will be found to show any collusion between Trump and Russia. Remember when the Democrats and the fake news media were telling us that Trump loved Putin and they were somehow best friends? Look at reality today. President Trump has spoken out strongly about Putin's actions in Syria, and Putin has been testing our president's resolve through provocative military acts. Does that sound like two folks in love with each other to you? It's all a smokescreen to tie down the Trump administration in needless lawsuits and obstruction. What I am about to read to you came to me from other sources, but it's on target. It was part of my research, and I hope you'll listen carefully. Do you remember when Donald Trump received $500,000 for a speech in Moscow, and that was paid for by Renaissance Capital, a company tied to Russian intelligence agencies? Oops, wait. That was Bill Clinton while Hillary was Secretary of State. Do you remember when Donald Trump approved the sale of 20% of U.S. uranium to the Russians while he was Secretary of State, which gave control of that uranium to Rosatom, the Russian state atomic energy corporation? No, wait, that was Hillary Clinton. Do you remember when Donald Trump lied about that and said that he wasn't part of approving the deal that gave the Russians 1/5 of our uranium? But then the emails were leaked, showing that he did in fact lie about it. Oh, wait, that too was Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager, John Podesta. Surely you remember when Donald Trump got $145 million from shareholders of the uranium company sold to the Russians. No, that was Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. Remember when Donald Trump accepted millions of dollars in donations from Russian oligarchs like the chairman of a company that's part of the Russian nuclear research cluster, the wife of the Moscow mayor, and a close friend of Putin's? No, that was Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. Or when Donald Trump failed to disclose all those donations before becoming Secretary of State, and it was only found out when a journalist went through Canadian tax records. That was Hillary Clinton. And when Donald Trump told Mitt Romney that the 80s called and wanted its Russian policy back because the Cold War was over, that was Barack Obama. And the Democrats want to spend hundreds of millions of dollars and waste valuable time to witch hunt for any connection between Donald Trump and Russia. None of them so much as whispered about an investigation of the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, and their cozy relationship with Russia, a relationship that is highly questionable and far less contact than from Trump. The Democrats and the fake news media have dug themselves a very deep hole in this Russian obsession. When the facts are known, and we find out that it was all lies and distortions, will you still remain a Democrat and support it? Let the investigations go forward. But when it's all over, the Democrats and their mainstream liberal media hounds must be held accountable. It will not be enough to say, well, let's just move along, or that's old news, as Democrats have done with other witch hunts. America is some $20 trillion in debt. Can you think of any way that we could have better spent hundreds of millions of dollars than on a witch hunt that ends in yet another Democratic conspiracy lie? Thomas Sowell is a world-renowned economist. He's 86 years old now, but this black scholar has been a thorn in the side of liberals for decades. Before I tell you about welfare fraud, let me give you several bits of Thomas Sowell's wisdom. Over the years, he said this: people who enjoy meetings should never be in charge of anything. He said, if you have always believed that everyone should play by the same rules and be judged by the same standards that would have gotten you labeled a radical 60 years ago, a liberal 30 years ago, and a racist today, sometime the next time that some academics tell you how important diversity is, ask them how many conservatives there are in their sociology department. Sowell said too much of what is called education is little more than an expensive isolation from reality. Sowell also said, it is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting those decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong. He went on to say, since this is an era when many people are concerned about fairness and social justice, what is your fair share of what somebody else has worked for? Sowell said, racism does not have a good track record. It's been tried out for a long time, and you'd think by now we'd want to put an end to it instead of merely putting it under new management. He said, the problem isn't that Johnny can't read. The problem isn't even that Johnny can't think. The problem is that Johnny doesn't know what thinking is. He confuses it with feelings. This smart man also said, when you want to help people, you tell them the truth. When you want to help yourself, you tell them what they want to hear. And he said, there is so much more wisdom in what Thomas Sowell has written over the years. I said that. But I'll close with this bit of Thomas Sowell's wisdom. He said, the welfare state is the oldest con game in the world. First, you take people's money away quietly, and then you give it, some of it, back to them flamboyantly. And now, to my research on a welfare system that has more holes in it than Swiss cheese. Since 1965, the number of Americans living below the poverty line had been declining continuously since the beginning of the decade and was only half of what it had been 15 years earlier. The black poverty rate, in particular, had been cut nearly in half between 1940 and 1960. Despite those trends, the welfare state expanded dramatically under Lyndon Johnson when he declared his war on poverty. Johnson's largesse with the public's purse was self-serving. He knew that if the government provided its citizens with enough goodies, those people, black or white, would come to depend upon the government, and their votes would belong to the political party providing the welfare. Between the mid-60s and the mid-70s, the dollar value of public housing quintupled, and the amount spent on food stamps rose more than tenfold. By 1977, the number of people receiving welfare had more than doubled since 1960. The most devastating byproduct of the mushrooming welfare state was the corrosive effect it had on the American family life, particularly in the black communities. As provisions in welfare laws offered ever-increasing economic incentives for shunning marriage and avoiding the formation of two-parent families, illegitimacy rates rose dramatically. A mother generally receives far more money from welfare if she is single rather than married. Welfare programs for the poor incentivizes the very behavior that perpetuates poverty. Martin Luther King Jr. said, quote, nothing is so much needed as a secure family life for a people to pull themselves out of poverty, end quote. Through no fault of their own, the black family, which had survived centuries of slavery and discrimination, began rapidly disintegrating in the liberal welfare state that subsidized unwed pregnancy and changed welfare from an emergency rescue to a way of life. Around 35% of the total U.S. population receives some form of welfare today. Nearly 140 million Americans are involved. As of September 2014, about 46.5 million people, or 15% of us, were receiving food stamps through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. It's troubling that there seems to be more people added to the free food stamp program, but few, if ever, manage to come off of the program. Medicaid is a health care program that provides free or low-cost care to qualifying individuals and family. There are some 90 million people, or approximately 28% of us, receiving Medicaid benefits. Women are more likely to seek help through welfare programs. Close to 28% of those aged 16 to 64 are receiving benefits. Among men in the same age range, slightly more than 20% receive some type of welfare. Children are more likely to be on welfare than adults, with almost 40% of children aged 5 and under living in households that receive public assistance, almost 40%. almost 36% of kids aged 6 to 10, and 34% of those in the 11 to 15-year-old category are on welfare. California tops all states in the number of welfare recipients, with nearly 540,000. Relying on government-funded programs in California is going broke. Alaska, however, has the highest per capita rate, with about 8% of Alaskan households getting benefits. The state with the highest percentage of people on food stamps is not a state at all, but the District of Columbia. Approximately 150,000 Washington, D.C. residents receive food stamps. That's nearly 23%, or a quarter of the district's total population. Through 2011, whites accounted for 16.3% of all welfare recipients, and blacks accounted for 39.7%, an increase of 15% since the year 2000. Remember, black Americans make up less than 14% of the population, and yet take up 39.7% as welfare recipients. I'll address why that is the case later in this commentary. There are approximately 45 million immigrants living in the United States, both legal and illegal, and a number of them received some form of welfare. For example, 22% of adult immigrants and nearly half of the children from immigrant households have Medicaid coverage. About 32% of non-citizens receive food stamps. Seniors are often overlooked in discussions about welfare. Just shy of 13% of adults 65 and older are drawing some sort of welfare benefit. As for married couples, about 15% were on welfare in 2011. That's double the number on welfare in 2000. Households headed by single mothers are the most likely to be on welfare. In 2011, single mothers represented 55% of the total welfare population, compared to just 37% in the year 10,000. And that number continues to grow larger. About 38% of people who did not graduate high school received welfare assistance, with about half of them still requiring that assistance for over 3 years. About 22% of high school graduates and 10% of those who attended college for at least a year received welfare aid. A tremendous amount of money is spent on welfare programs each year, and recipients benefit in some states more than in others. Mississippi pays the least in welfare. Alaska pays the most. Welfare residents in Hawaii average just over $49,000 in benefits each year. Some states are more generous than others when it comes to food stamps, but on average, families get just over $133 for every person in the household every month. Medicaid spending averages about $6,000 a person enrolled in the program nationwide. On an individual level, the average benefit for elderly participants is about $14,000, while an average of $17,000 was spent annually on individuals with disabilities. There are dozens of state and federally sponsored welfare programs. When considered collectively, it comes to around $1 trillion in spending each year. Altogether, improper welfare payments cost the government about $60 billion every year. The food stamp program claims the largest share at approximately $3 billion each year. Keep a grip on your blood pressure. I'm going to detail a few of the worst cases of welfare fraud. While millions of poor individuals and families rely on welfare to afford basic living expenses, others plot to defraud the system. Welfare is any government assistance program that uses taxpayers' funds to give money to citizens suffering under financial stress. Some 4 million households in the United States and Puerto Rico receive welfare today. Unfortunately, people in dire straits aren't the only ones benefiting from public aid. Scammers commit welfare fraud by giving false information and obtaining money they are not entitled to. Meanwhile, many rip off the taxpayers for smaller amounts. I looked up the 10 worst cases of welfare fraud. I don't have time to give them all to you now. But Linda Taylor was nicknamed the Welfare Queen by the Chicago Tribune. Taylor swindled over $150,000 each year in tax-free income from the government during the 1970s. The Illinois native used 80 different names and 30 fake home addresses to collect food stamps. She also claimed Social Security and veterans benefits for four deceased husbands who never existed. Taylor drove a new Cadillac owned from Southside Homes and frequently vacationed in Hawaii. She owned four other homes. In 1977, this 47-year-old thief stood trial and was sentenced just 2 to 6 years in prison, a small price to pay for the benefits she ripped off from the taxpayers. Then there's a 46-year-old cafe owner named Wael Gosset from Burbank, Illinois. He stole nearly $1 million in government welfare funds. This scammer fraudulently used 3,000 Illinois Link cards to buy immense amounts of energy drinks and candy. He then resold that merchandise to reap big profits. Karma caught up with this scammer in 2015 when he was charged with five felonies, including identity theft. Yet the man was released from Cook County Jail on just $50,000 bond. One of the longest criminal records for welfare fraud is held by Dorothy Mae Woods. In 1983, this California crook was convicted for bilking $377,000 in public aid. For a decade, Woods posed as 12 poverty-stricken women and claimed 38 non-existent children. Phony birth certificates helped her collect payments while living in a Pasadena mansion and driving a Rolls Royce. Not learning her lesson, Dorothy Mae Woods committed fraud again in 1987. This time, she collected aid for a 14-year-old son who did not live with her. In 1997, Woods was arrested a third time for filing 135 bogus tax returns that netted her $305,000. Then there's Barbara Williams, a 33-year-old woman from Los Angeles County who showed another horrific example of welfare fraud. From 1971 to 1978, Williams collected approximately $250,000 in illegal government payments. She used 10 different aliases to open 10 separate welfare cases. She printed fake birth certificates to claim over 70 children in total. She also collected around $50,000 in unwarranted food stamps. Her fraudulent funding helped her afford a luxury Ladera Heights mansion and a four-unit apartment building. Williams even showed up for trial driving a sporty silver Cadillac. In 1978, her four-day trial resulted in an eight-year prison sentence. I'll give you one more. The largest welfare fraud case for the Oregon Department of Human Services was perpetrated by husband and wife team Dante and Lakeisha Muhammad. Starting in 2001, Lakeisha received benefits for disabilities that left her wheelchair-bound and not able to work. Video was later discovered of her walking into Costco and lifting a 5-gallon oil can unassisted. Dante was paid by Oregon to serve as his wife's full-time caregiver. However, he also worked as an event planner and earned $70,000 a year. The Muhammads were caught using unjustified state payments to buy a gated Las Vegas home. In 2013, Lakeisha and Dante earned 5 years and 3 years sentences, respectively. There are others. I could go on most of the day. But I will tell you this. If we could just somehow find a way to eliminate the fraud and conspiracy that takes so much money from our government, we wouldn't be in $20 trillion debt.